Getting Started with Joshua by Dr. Ted Hildebrandt. Introduction to Joshua. The book of Joshua is named after its main character, Joshua, the son of Nun. Joshua served as Moses' young aide, who accompanied Moses as he entered God's presence in the tent of meeting, Exodus 33:11. He was originally named Hoshea, which means salvation, but Moses renamed him Joshua. Yahweh saves, Numbers 13:16. The Greek translation for Joshua is, quote, Jesus, end quote. Joshua's first act was as a military leader defeating the Amalekites in Exodus 17, verses 8 through 13. He then accompanied Moses up Mount Sinai when Moses received the law, Exodus chapter 24, verse 13, and was chosen to represent his tribe of Ephraim as one of the 12 spies who were sent out from Kadesh Barnea to reconnoiter the Promised Land, Numbers 13 and 14. He and Caleb were the two who stood strong against the majority report that rejected going up and taking the land. He was Moses' hand-picked successor, Numbers chapter 27, verses 12 through 22, and many believe he may have recorded the events of Moses' death in Deuteronomy chapter 34. In the text of Joshua, there is an implicit comparison between Moses and Joshua by parallel events. They both parted waters, the Red Sea, the Jordan River, Joshua chapter 4, verse 23. Both circumcised their, quote, people, end quote, prior to beginning major acts of redemption, Exodus chapter 4, verses 24 to 25, Joshua chapter 5, verses 13 through 15. Both met an angel and were told to take off their sandals because they were standing on holy ground, Exodus chapter 3, verse 5, and Joshua chapter 5, verse 15. Both won battles holding up a staff slash javelin in their uplifted hands, Exodus chapter 17, verses 9 through 11, and Joshua chapter 8, verse 18. Both oversaw covenant renewal ceremonies, Deuteronomy chapter 29, Joshua chapter 8, verses 30 to 35, and chapter 24, verses 1 through 27. The military victories of the two are juxtaposed in the list in Joshua chapter 12. This comparison of the two leaders is made explicit several times when God says, quote, as I was with Moses, so I will be with you, end quote. Joshua chapter 1, verse 5 and verse 17, chapter 3, verse 7, chapter 4, verse 14. Repeatedly, Joshua is characterized as carrying out the commands that Moses had given. Joshua chapter 8, verse 30 and verse 35, chapter 11, verse 20, chapter 21, verse 2, and chapter 22, verse 2. Joshua begins as Moses' aide, chapter 1, verse 1, and ends up with the Mosaic title, quote, servant of the Lord, end quote, chapter 24, verse 19. One must be acutely aware that it was the Lord himself who fought for Israel, chapter 10, verse 42, gave them the gift of the land as their tribal inheritance, chapter 14, verse 2, and chapter 18, verse 3, and ultimately gave them rest, chapter 23, verse 1. Indeed, it is God who parts the Jordan River, topples the walls of Jericho, develops the strategy for taking Ai, rains down hail, killing the southern kings, and guides the allotment of the tribal territories. Contents of the book. The book of Joshua naturally divides into two sections, the conquest of the Promised Land, chapters 2 through 12, and the distribution of the tribal territorial allotments, chapters 13 through 21. These two sections are introduced by a prologue with the Lord commissioning Joshua, chapter 1, and close with a covenant renewal postlude and the death of Joshua, chapters 22 through 24. The book opens with a series of speeches utilizing Deuteronomy-type terminology as the Lord instructs Joshua after the death of Moses to, quote, be strong and courageous, end quote, and to, quote, not let this book of the law depart from your mouth. Meditate on it day and night. Then you will be prosperous and successful, end quote. Chapter 1, verse 8. Joshua orders the Transjordan tribes of Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh to send their fighting men across the Jordan to help him take the land, just as Moses commanded them. Chapters 2 through 12 describe the conquest of the land. Chapters 2 through 5 feature preparations with the two spies being hidden by Rahab in Jericho, chapter 2, and her great confession that the Lord had given the land to Israel. She and her family receive a reprieve, hanging a red cord from her window. Rahab will later appear in the line of David and ultimately in the genealogy of Jesus Christ, Matthew chapter 1. The Israelites cross the Jordan River during the spring flood, led by the Ark of God. The river is dried up as the waters are heaped up upstream. After the Jordan crossing, there are a series of rituals. 12 stones are piled up as a memorial at Gilgal, where Israel celebrates its third Passover. The males are circumcised, and the manna stops because they can now eat the rich produce of the land, chapters 4 and 5. Gilgal will become a special ritual site for Israel. Chapter 6 narrates the daily silent circling of Jericho, led by the Ark of God, until the seventh day when the city is circled 7 times, concluding with the trumpets blasting, the people shouting, and the walls tumbling down. Joshua places a curse on the city so that it cannot be rebuilt. Jericho is the Lord's as the first fruits. The Israelites next train their sights on Ai, chapter 7. It is while attacking this small town that they experience their first defeat due to the sin of Achan. He had stolen some of the Lord's banned plunder from Jericho and hid it under his tent. Achan's sin is exposed, and the devoted goods, Achan and his family, are destroyed by fire in the Valley of Achor, which is a play on the Hebrew word for, quote, trouble, end quote. Chapter 7, verse 26. Compare Gilgal, chapter 5, verse 9. God strategically orchestrates an ambush. Joshua executes it with javelin raised, and the town of Ai is burned. Chapter 8. Israel then travels north to Mount Ebal for a covenant renewal ceremony, where an altar of uncut stones is built, and the law of Moses is publicly read, then written upon plastered stones. Chapter 8, verses 30 to 35. Without consulting the Lord, the Israelites, deceived by the Gibeonites' old worn-out clothes and moldy bread, make an alliance with them. Chapter 9. The Gibeonite cities are located in the very heartland of Canaan. The kings of the south, headed by Adonai Zedek of Jerusalem, rally to strike the Gibeonites. Joshua and his troops march all night from Gilgal to defend Gibeon. He prays for the sun to, quote, stand still, end quote. And there never was a day like it, quote, when the Lord listened to a man, end quote. Chapter 10, verse 14. God fights for Israel as the hailstones kill more than the Israelite swords. The Northern League is led by Jabin, king of Hazor, who rallies a huge army, including chariots, to the waters of Merom. Joshua roundly defeats them, and there is, quote, nothing left undone of all that the Lord commanded Moses, end quote. Joshua chapter 11, verse 15. This first section, chapters 1 through 12, concludes with a victory list, chapter 12. The victories of Moses in Transjordan, Og and Sihon, are juxtaposed with a list of Joshua's victories over the kings of Jericho, Ai, Jerusalem, Gezer, and others. The second section, chapters 13 through 21, narrates the allotment of the land to the various tribes. Chapter 13 opens with the acknowledgement that there still remains a significant amount of land to be taken. Reuben, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh got their territory after Moses' defeat of Og of Bashan and Sihon of Heshbon in Transjordan. But they were unable to drive out the Geshurites, chapter 13, verse 13. It is twice observed that the tribe of Levi received no inheritance because the Lord was their inheritance, chapter 13, verses 14 and 33. The tribal boundary descriptions and a tribal town listing begin in chapter 14 with the description of the allotments west of the Jordan in Canaan proper. Hebron is given to Caleb, chapter 14. There is a lengthy description of Judah's inheritance with towns listed and boundaries carefully observed, chapter 15. The inheritances of Joseph's sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, are also described in great detail in chapters 16 and 17. The remaining seven tribes receive their inheritance by casting lots from the hands of Joshua and Eleazar, Aaron's son and high priest, chapter 19, verse 51. Benjamin is placed between Judah and Ephraim in the center of Canaan. Simeon finds its home in southern Judah. Zebulun and Issachar are found occupying the west and east sides of the Valley of Jezreel, chapter 19. Asher and Naphtali are on the west and east side of Galilee. Dan's inheritance is out by the Philistines west of Benjamin. Dan, however, decides it is too dangerous there, and the tribe moves north to the lush foot of Mount Hermon, consolidating down to a single town, quote, Dan, end quote, in the extreme north. The six cities of refuge are identified, chapter 20, and the 48 Levitical cities are listed in chapter 21. Chapter 22 narrates the eastern tribes returning home to their inheritance in Transjordan. They decide to build an altar near the Jordan River to symbolize their bonds with the tribes west of the Jordan. The western tribes rally to Shiloh to confront the Transjordan tribes, accusing them of turning away from the Lord and threatening them with war. The Transjordan tribes explain their situation, and civil war is narrowly averted. Joshua's farewell address advises that they beware of intermarriage, serving other gods, and violating the covenant. He acknowledges that all of God's good promises had been fulfilled. He then, in chapter 24, assembles all Israel to Shechem and rehearses the history of Israel with a particular challenge to reject other gods. He sets a clear choice and a sacred commitment before them. Quote, "Choose yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your forefathers served beyond the river, but as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord," end quote. Joshua chapter 24, verse 15. The covenant is renewed at Shechem and recorded in the book of the law of God, and a stone is set up as a witness, chapter 24, verse 25. Joshua is buried in Timnath-serah in Ephraim. Eleazar, the son of Aaron, dies and passes the high priesthood on to his son Phinehas. Difficult issues in Joshua. Critical theories. Critics have looked at Joshua in two ways over the years. First, some have tried to extend the source-critical JEDP model into Joshua, suggesting a hexateuch that includes Joshua rather than a Pentateuch, Genesis to Deuteronomy, that does not. The J.E. sources were traced into Joshua chapter 1 through 11, and the tribal town lists in Joshua chapter 12 through 21 are seen as a result of the priestly writer, P. This theory has now been abandoned by most. Another approach was developed by Martin Noth, linking Joshua with the following historical books, Judges through 2 Kings. Noth suggested that all these works were fashioned by a Deuteronomistic writer or writers. This Deuteronomic history, or DH as they call it, was written according to the themes and idioms initially expressed in Deuteronomy in the time of Josiah, around 612 BC. While there are common themes and idioms that do unify the historical books, Joshua through 2 Kings, with Deuteronomy, it may be that later writers purposely synced their way of looking at history to Deuteronomy because, as Israelites, they shared a common covenantal worldview that obedience brought blessing and disobedience brought the curse. Shared ideas do not necessarily demand shared authorship. There is also a massive challenge to the, quote, conquest, end quote, model described in Joshua, moving to a more infiltration or even a Marxist-style internal peasant revolt approach to the, quote, taking, end quote, of Canaan by the early Israelites. The archaeological data for Joshua is mixed. A word of caution is perhaps well advised before jumping to major conclusions based on incomplete and highly speculative archaeological evidence from this period. Hess has an insightful discussion of the historicity of Joshua, Hess pages 26 to 31, in his commentary on Joshua. Critics have taken the statement, quote, until this day, end quote, chapter 4, verse 9, chapter 5, verse 9, chapter 7, 26, 8, 28 through 29, chapter 14, verse 14, and chapter 16, verse 10, et al., to imply a lengthy separation between the historical event and when it was written down. Joshua chapter 6, verse 25 demonstrates that such a separation need not be the case as, quote, Rahab is still alive until this day, end quote. Thus, this section was written within her lifetime. Tensions in Joshua. Hawk, in the IVP, Dictionary of Old Testament History, has highlighted a series of tensions in Joshua. These tensions are important for gaining insight into the book itself as a canonical whole. On the one hand, the book of Joshua proclaims Joshua took Canaan and destroyed all its kings. Joshua chapter 10, verses 40 through 43, chapter 11, verses 16 through 20, and chapter 12. Yet, on the other hand, chapter 13 has the Lord pointing out, quote, there are still very large areas of land to be taken over, end quote, and then proceeds to list them, chapter 13, verses 2 through 5. As the text continues, other failures are acknowledged, chapter 15, verse 63, chapter 16, verse 10, chapter 17, verses 12 and 13. On the other hand, Joshua declares all the directions of Moses were followed. Chapter 1, verses 16 through 18, chapter 4, verse 8, chapter 11, verse 15, chapter 24, verses 16 through 18. Yet, on the other hand, reports of problems, chapter 7, and warnings against the enticement to the worship of foreign gods continue, chapter 24, verses 19 through 20. On the one hand, there are descriptions of Israel's unity as, quote, all Israel, end quote, gathers, chapter 1, verses 12 to 18, chapter 3, verses 14 through 17, chapter 4, verses 10 through 13, and chapter 8, verses 30 to 35. Yet, on the other hand, there are strong hints of intertribal tensions, chapter 17, verse 16, chapter 22, verses 10 and following. On the one hand, Caleb received Hebron, chapter 14, verses 13 through 15. Yet, on the other hand, Hebron was given to the Levites, who received it as a Levitical city, with Caleb inheriting only the surrounding fields, chapter 21, verses 11 and following. Such tensions even flow over into the book of Judges. Joshua records the destruction of the king of Jerusalem, or Jebus, and similarly, Judges chapter 1, verse 8 records the men of Judah capturing Jerusalem. Yet it is not until the time of David that the city actually becomes an Israelite city. 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 6 and following. And even Judges chapter 1:21 acquiesces that Israel could not dislodge the Jebusites at Jerusalem. Likewise, the king of Gezer is killed, chapter 12, verse 12. Yet Judges chapter 1, verse 29 makes it clear they could not drive the Canaanites out of Gezer. Solomon, hundreds of years later, receives Gezer as a wedding gift from Pharaoh, 1 Kings chapter 9, verse 16. It should be clear that the towns could be taken repeatedly and kings were killed, yet the native population could re-inhabit towns. These diverse reports of multiple taking of various cities should be no surprise to any modern reader when they reflect on how many times Fallujah, Iraq, was taken and retaken with and without sustained control. War. The execution of war and the elimination of the Canaanites is perhaps the most difficult ethical problem in the Old Testament. The prescriptions for war are laid out in Deuteronomy chapter 7 and 20, but are actually implemented in Joshua chapters 6 through 11. Many find the summary statements at the end of Joshua 10 troubling. Quote, "He, Joshua, left no survivors. He totally destroyed all who breathed, just as the Lord, the God of Israel, had commanded," end quote. Chapter 10, verse 40, compare chapter 11, verse 20. Similarly, after taking Jericho, it is recorded, quote, "They devoted the city to the Lord, Cherem, and destroyed with the sword everything living in it, men and women, old and young, cattle, sheep, and donkeys," end quote. Chapter 6, verse 21. While this question cannot be solved here, the following provides a context for the larger discussion. First, Genesis chapter 15, verse 16 warns that the sin of the Amorites had not yet reached its full measure, and that after four generations, Abraham's descendants would come back and execute judgment on the sin of the Amorites and take their land. In one sense, the taking of Canaan can be seen as a divine judgment on that culture. Compare Sodom. Amos chapters 1 and 2 shows that God judges all nations for their egregious, sinful behavior. Second, it should be clear this is not ethnic cleansing or genocide. Israel welcomed others when they left Egypt as a, quote, "mixed multitude," end quote. Exodus chapter 12, verse 38. Moses himself married a Cushite woman. Numbers chapter 12, verse 1. Moses took advice from Jethro the Midianite. Exodus chapter 18, and Rahab of Jericho is found in the royal Davidic line. Clearly, there is no xenophobia here. Indeed, the Abrahamic covenant describes their destiny as being a blessing to all nations. Genesis chapter 12, verse 3. In the legal sections, Israel was commanded to show compassion to the aliens in their midst. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 34. Deuteronomy chapter 26, verses 11 through 13. Third, the violence of war in the taking of Canaan is rather unique and only engaged by divine command through a sanctioned prophet. Israel did go to war at other times for defensive purposes, having been attacked or oppressed, but the initiating of Cherem is only really found here in Joshua chapters 6 through 10. And then only really at Jericho, Ai, and Hazor. So this is the exception, not the norm. Fourth, one must read this record of war in the context of ancient Near Eastern rhetorical patterns. Hyperbole, exaggeration, and bravado were the common literary form used to describe war in the ancient Near East. It is clear that many of the statements of complete and total destruction are in fact hyperbole, overstatements and not meant to be taken literally. For example, when Joshua claims all the Canaanites and Anakites are destroyed, chapter 10, verses 40 through 42, chapter 11, verses 14 through 15, verse 17 and verse 22, yet we find out later Caleb must deal with the Anakites, chapter 15, verse 14. Similarly, we find out that many Canaanites were indeed left in the land, indicating that there were many survivors, chapter 13, verses 1 through 5 and verse 13, chapter 18, verse 3, and Judges, chapter 1, verses 19, 21, and 35. So the situation is complex. Archaeology has also confirmed that there was no mass annihilation of the indigenous population at this time. There is, however, a serious warning here that idolatry and assimilation of pagan religious practices would not be tolerated. These destructions should be understood as harbingers of the final judgment or coming day of the Lord and be seen as a call to repentance and commitment to righteousness. Questions. Number 1. How do the idioms and themes of Deuteronomy show up in Joshua? Number 2. How does Joshua contrast with the early chapters of Judges? Number 3. In what ways does Joshua show himself to be a good leader? Number 4. What do we learn about God as we watch him engaging in the book of Joshua? Number 5. What do we learn from the various confessions made in the book? Rahab, Gibeonites, Transjordan tribes, chapter 22, and Joshua, chapters 23 and 24. Number 6. How do you understand the wars presented in Joshua? How do you reconcile Joshua with Jesus' statements in the Sermon on the Mount to love our enemies? Number 7. How does the theme of command/fulfillment crop up in Joshua? And number 8, at what points do you see tensions in the book of Joshua? Can we resolve these? This is Getting Started with Joshua by Dr. Ted Hildebrandt.